I got the thumbs up from Jacob. That means it's Busted Pencils time. Fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. Class is in session. Me, Dr. Tim Slecker, Jacob, chairman of the boards, and Johnny Lupinacci. You know, sometimes those other places where we, you know, spend our time, Jacob, they call in and say, sorry, you're needed here.
I believe you told me he's helping pass the continuing resolution in Washington, I think.
Something extremely important. Yeah. I wasn't not as important as what we do here, but occasionally sometimes things like that happen. And we make those accommodations because, you know, Educated Educators Talking Education also have the back of Educated Educators Talking Education. So, you know, that's what we do. Jacob, though, man, loving the fact that we get a return guest and always appreciate when we have our return guest. You, listener, may remember, and if you haven't remembered, I know Jacob in this podcast description is going to put the link to the show where we met our awesome guest. It's Mike Bigley, superintendent of Whitehall School District in Western Wisconsin. Mike helped launch Liftoffs Learning, and that came out of CESA 4 to tackle, you know, the rural do more with less reality by building future-ready pathways for kids, and all of those things. Yeah, we're talking about, you know, AI and all of the interesting connections. Mike, welcome back to Busted Pencils. I got to tell you, though, we had an interview with the, he calls himself, not the principal, Jacob.
No.
What was
it? I know that the teachers are helpers, I believe, or
no,
guides.
The teacher, teachers guides, are guides, right? And he's the head.
He's the head.
Head of school.
Yeah, head of schools, and we talked from two-hour learning, what they're doing, you know, in that school in Austin where, and we don't say this with any negativity, but where it's costing $40,000 a year to send your kid there, and you know, their wish, though, is to really, you know, get and create some of the opportunities that they're doing in public settings. And we said, hey, we said, check it out, though. We know people who are actually pulling this off and doing the thing in the public. And you're like, you know, you got to meet our friends up there in Western Wisconsin, Mike Bigley. So, yeah, Mike, I mean, all of the work that, you know, you guys are doing up there in Western Wisconsin, rural Wisconsin, it really reminded us when we interviewed, you know, the Alpha School, the two-hour learning, it going like, guess what? Doing great things is, yes, tied to resources a lot of the times, but a lot of times it's tied to leadership. And that's what I wanted to come back and go, Mike, you know, thanks for coming back on Busted Pencils, but thanks for being such an awesome leader, man.
Well, I appreciate it. And certainly we have a really great team that of different personalities, different skill sets that have really come together to put together the public version of exactly what you're talking about. So,
yeah. Yeah. So what we are talking about, you know, too, because we've got more to get to, though, because you've been up to you know, doing a little bit of stuff since the last time we talked to you, but Liftoffs, give us, you know, the new listener and the return listener, though, just a refresher, what's going on with Liftoffs?
Well, Liftoffs itself is a movement of structural change around public education and primarily rural public education. Really geared at redefining what success looks like, then what structural changes have to be put in place, leveraging all of the emerging technology, shifting from grading and standards to competencies to show what kids can actually do, and merging all of those together in a new school system. I think that's really what we're after. That gets better results more efficiently, and really meets kids where they are. That's really the challenge, right? And that's the goal.
Well, Jacob, hearing that too, right, kind of makes me think back to, it was Chris, the head of schools for Alpha Schools.
Yeah.
Sound very similar to what they're doing at Alpha Schools.
We get that a lot. You know, this sounds like Alpha Schools. I think the good part is we had this pegged about a year before we even knew what the Alpha Schools were. So I think we're pretty proud of that fact. But I think our, you know, much like their approach, it comes from doing better for kids. And I think we can't lose sight of that.
Right.
Certainly we're committed to educating every kid, right? Not just the kids that can afford it. In really providing those high caliber experiences and individual growth, maximizing the human capacity. We use that phrase a lot. And then shifting away from minimal compliance. So much of what's the least I can do to obtain some arbitrary grade that somebody in an office somewhere decided this was important.
And see, and that's what, you know, Liftoffs and your team, like you said, the partners, the other schools that are involved, but, you know, the commitment to what you just pointed out, structural change. I can hear other people going like, whoa, how do they do that? Because, you know, that's the hardest change is that, you know, when you hear people talking about, well, you know, if we didn't have to do, you know, grading, if we didn't have to follow the bell schedule, if we didn't have to, and it sounds like your team kind of said, well, what if we don't have to?
Well, and I think there's an awful lot, Tim, around folks have a lot of perceptions of what they can and can't do. I think when you take a look at what the limits are and what we're required to do, it's not as restrictive as folks think. I think when you really, and then, you know, we hear a lot, well, what do people think? Well, anything that's good for kids, I've not had an adult yet that says we shouldn't do it, right? It's right. Good for kids.
You mean nobody has shown up and went, wait a minute, we really want our kids sitting in rows all the time, listening to teachers drone on and on and be shamed for not doing well on their standardized tests. We want that for our kids, Mike.
Right. We want them restricted to a 1950s and 60s model with Industry 2.0 technology and taking assessments around depth of knowledge, 1 and 2 questioning, right? When we know the world requires much greater thought process and critical thinking than that.
You know, Mike, when we talked to the Alpha School guys, I know we felt a little, it wasn't a problem, but we thought, oh, we're just promoting a private system of education. How do people feel about that? But that's not the idea of it. The idea is that when we see good ideas and think people trying new things, that's what matters. Because eventually that gets out. Good ideas proliferate and they make it to the public schools. You guys are leading the way in that. I want to ask you, what are some of the things for this school year that you're looking at with interest? I mean, what are you trying this year?
Well, we're continuing to find more pilots and more partners around the personalized learning. You know, the platforms are significant. We're building capacity with our staff. We've really empowered them to try things. You know, it's not a judgy scenario. It's not a catch scenario. We're hoping that organically folks can learn and really become passionate about what they can do for kids. So I think we're continuing down that work. We're really diving now into the competencies. How can we track that? How does that equate to a grade system? How do we work with our higher ed partners to help them create that same structural change concept? And then how do we migrate our kids into, you know, that's as much as K-12 is changing, higher ed is going to change dramatically as we go forward. So,
yeah, Mike, I mean, I am in the middle of a conversation at a higher ed institution where I might have some interest in, and, you know, engaging the conversation about that. And, you know, it is, I mean, for some of my colleagues, we see very plainly that the structures upon which higher education has largely rested, you know, those structures themselves, even that, you know, the 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, class from 10 to 10:50, 3 credits over 15 weeks, and going, it's like, well, you know, wait a minute. And we're talking about, you know, technology and AI. What happens when AI has actually every bit, every nuance, every ounce of knowledge that that 15-week, three times a day or three times a week course that you sat there to get that information? Holy crap, I don't need to sit there anymore to get that information.
Right. And more so, more importantly, then how do I use that information, right? Yeah. That's the depth of knowledge 3 and 4 type things.
Yeah.
So then how do we really teach kids, first of all, to engage authentically, to collaborate, to communicate, to work ethically, morally, right? And then how do we really get them to start understanding they can solve real problems that we once thought were impossible? You know?
Thinking about that, and Jacob, jump in and, you know, clarify me if I'm off, you know, because that happens. But, you know, when the way you say that, it's like solve problems, you know, and I think what happened in particular the old model was there was an assumption that problem solving occurred as a result of receiving knowledge. You know, it was kind of like everybody really wanted the goal of education to, quote, be critical thinking, but we only ever really, measured your ability to remember.
And we maybe got to the critical thinking pieces if we had time left in the class period after we did the superficial stuff, for lack of a better way to say it. You know, I think that piece has become, we've really talked a lot, dug into a lot, how artificially limiting we were as the adults. We're the problem. We want to understand engagement problems in kids. Take a look at the adults, myself included. I did it. You know, we talked a lot about what kids couldn't do. I think our challenge now, so going back to Jacob, what you were asking about this year, is we're trying to find out what the limits of our kids really are. You know, we found a new sensor kit that we're going to pilot with a new company that's a startup, and we're doing a pilot for them. And, you know, they targeted middle school. We're going to throw that baby in kindergarten.
Oh,
and we'll move it up, though, instead of moving it down. Right. Nice. If it's too high level for kindergarten, we're going to try it in first grade. Let's go find out where they can start to really do something with it instead of starting in middle school. And if it's too easy, then we've missed it. Right. Those types of things are kind of where we're spending our time.
I love that spirit of innovation and trying things and seeing what sticks and then being able to move on from things that might not work so well instead of being afraid of coming into those situations. I'm a bit of a history buff, so I know that in the Punic Wars, one of the things that people talked about is that the Carthaginians punished generals for failure, but the Romans encouraged and rewarded people for success. And that led to sort of the more attitude that you guys have adopted. I'm wondering, what are some of those artificial or perceived boundaries that keep people from innovating that you found are actually things that can be changed?
Well, I think there's always the fear of retribution, right? For lack of a better way to say it, or public outcry, or, you know, there are a lot of folks that get pretty beat up every time they try something new, and especially in the public environment. I think, you know, that's part of our job as leaders to understand that those are the challenges that we have to throw forward and really jump in. I think those are the real limits. I think there's also an awareness issue that we have, is we're still living under this fallacy that everything's okay, that our current system is meeting the needs of our future generations and all those things. And that was a big, you know, you talked about doing some cool things, right? I had a chance to go to China early this fall and really start looking at how unaware I consider myself pretty in tune to what's happening. And I was blown away, and that doesn't happen very often.
All right. So, Mike, then you were in China, so I got to ask, did they put the head monitor on you and make you sit in class to measure the different types of brain waves you were having and then feed that back to your personalized AI tutor?
Well, no, we didn't do that, but we also weren't able to get into schools. Our visits were all around businesses, around AI companies, e-commerce companies, humanoid robot companies, you know, those types of things. But what we really found out is how big of a challenge we really have.
Yeah, I was going to say, so, you know, again, take away that silly image, but I know people have seen the image of the Chinese children with the headbands on, and people are like, right. Oh my God, look what they're doing in China. And it's like, okay, well, hold on. You know, I think where you are going and what you went is go like, okay, here's what's going on, you know, business, commerce, technology, innovation in China. And as an educator in America who's seeing that, you're kind of coming back and going, man, we got work to do.
Probably that's a very clean version of what my thought process was. Okay. Was we are getting really, I mean, we are dramatically behind in terms of this developing concept of what this technology both is capable of and how efficient and inexpensive it's becoming. You know, we saw humanoid robots that have some tremendous agility, the ability to be knocked down and get back up. That's a game changer. You know, with those types of things, you're not in how, I think one of the things that struck me was the sheer magnitude of the number of people. 700,000 smart robotics companies in China, 600 in the U.S.
Whoa. Wait, 700,000?
Yes. That's the believed number, 700,000 companies. A lot of them are startups.
Sure.
You know, funded by the government, but they also operate in an open source scenario with all of their programming. We run closed source in this country, open source. They all work on it together. They're trying to develop it in a collaborative environment with the idea of improving it. What a novel concept, right? For us to really think about. And I think the other takeaway was, is you would think in a communist country, it wouldn't be capitalistic, but it's very capitalistic.
Oh, yeah.
Very much so. Really looking at venture capital and being funded that way. The sheer technology, warehouses completely automated, autonomous vehicles running stuff back and forth nonstop. And that's all coming here. And if we think we're kidding ourselves. So from an awareness perspective, I think as educators, we have to talk about that.
Well, I mean, it makes me think about, you know, maybe a potential question that people, you know, maybe are kind of thinking they already know the answer to, and therefore they don't want to ask it. But Mike, you're kind of presenting the fact of going, boy, that's going to be the elimination of a lot of jobs. And what are we going to do with all the kids if they got nothing to do?
And I think that it's a legitimate question that we have to do, you know, that we have to think through. But I brought up earlier the problem solving. We can solve some things leveraging technology with human resources that we've never been able to solve. We know we're going to have power issues, right? If we continue to build data centers that are going to run the AI, you know, and we're still talking about relatively infantile AI, we're not talking about artificial superintelligence yet. You know, those types of concepts, we're going to have to redefine. You know, we just literally had a conversation here yesterday about the trades, right? Traditional trades, rough trades, for lack of a better way to say it. I don't like that term because they're highly skilled, right?
Right.
But I think if you don't have a blend of emerging technology into those trades going forward, that's where the loss of jobs is going to come.
That point, I'm glad you brought that up because, yeah, that is actually one of the, you know, pathways that I'm working on currently is with, I never really had heard the word rough trades, but looking at particularly carpenters right now and getting them enrolled into higher education and bachelor's degree programs, and then specifically talking to them, building a program based on what they're also seeing. And that is, they surveyed, you know, all of their members who are members of the Carpenters Union here in the Northeast. And one of the top areas that they want in higher education is more technology. And because, you know, I was talking to one of their leaders, and he said, Tim, you know, working on a construction site, it's truly skilled labor, as you say. It's not rough, but to maintain the skilled part is to recognize that they have to move up with the technologies now that will be coming into play, because you really then do end up becoming like truly, you know, left behind as a laborer.
Right. And going back to Jacob's question, you know, what are we working on this year, is we really need every one of our kids exposed to emerging technologies, not just the kids who are into tech. Right. If you don't understand sensor technology, if you don't understand the way that your social media data is being tracked and how that's being used to influence your thought process, all of those things have to be taught going forward. Sensor technology, robotics, automation, basic pneumatics, basic electronics, that has to become fundamental in our skill system or in our school system, our skill sets. I think that so now you go back to the liftoffs model, right? Yeah. We need to free up time in the day. We need to accelerate the effectiveness of our core instruction so that we can free up more time for that applied learning, that integrated learning, technology blended into mathematics, technology blended into science.
Yeah. Well, you know, and just again, a reminder too, is that you said you really weren't in China with education. It was with industry partners. I mean, that was the big kind of startup, if I remember, in the Whitehall area, was your connection and your school district's proximity to a big company, right?
Yep. With Ashley Furniture. Absolutely. Yep. And the Wanick family. And certainly they're the folks that took me to China.
Okay.
You know, the opportunities, again, that, you know, it's one of those things. You talk about restrictions, right? I would never, as an educator, be able to fund that trip. But these folks were going for their own business purposes, had the willingness to take somebody like me along. Mm-hmm. I think that perspective, though, is invaluable now. Yeah. In the ability to talk about that and show kids this type of technology. Robotic dogs, which we thought were kind of, you know, we didn't really know what to think of those till you understand there are hundreds of thousands of them deployed with the military and fire suppression, police scenarios, safety scenarios, truck lots. They can RFID truck inventories, you know, explosive scenarios. You get all kinds of different things. And these things are $4,000 or $5,000. You're not talking $100,000 pieces of equipment.
Wow.
You know,
No, go ahead, Mike.
No, I'm just, you know, that concept is something that we need an awareness on, and we're falling behind, and we can't even afford to catch up. They're four times the number of people, and that's just in China. We're not talking about India, Europe, South America, all of those other places in the world. We have to figure out a way to really be critical thinkers, be creative with all of these technologies and solve some real problems.
What I was going to ask Jacob is, you know, if he was thinking, okay, robotic dog, that could be a really great next pet for you, Jacob.
I was thinking about how when I was about 8 years old, they had a very terrible robot dog toy that was very popular around that time. But around that same time that those robot dogs were becoming popular for kids, I think about 2010 or so, I remember that's when we all recall that job posting started to say, you got to know how to use Excel. You got to know how to use Microsoft Office, all that whole suite of tools. And thinking about, if you were somebody who in the 90s had a good grasp of how the internet worked and how these tools worked, what a leg up that was, instead of being someone who in 2010 was like, I better learn how this internet thing works.
Right.
With your experience going to China, I'm wondering, did that give you any insights into ways, maybe not right now, but planning or thinking about how to change the process? How do you start teaching elementary school kids in a way that sets them up for a world that's a bit different?
I think you just touched on where I'm going to go, Jacob, is we're not teaching them anything anymore. Mm. We're getting out of their way. We're giving them opportunities to learn. We're enforcing that. We're facilitating. You know, we've talked a lot, and I probably will offend some folks. We've talked a lot in my career about the love of reading. Mm-hmm. We don't talk about the love of learning. That's what we have to get to. You know, that's not our job, I don't believe, to teach the love of reading. That's families, that's parents, that's social opportunities, right? We need to teach kids how to read, and we need to teach them to want to learn, and then we can get out of their way.
I was going to say, Mike, I was like, wait a minute, you are teaching, you're teaching truly how to learn.
Yes.
I mean, yeah, don't take away, because, and that is, and you know, when you talk to any teacher who has crossed over into that realm where they know, you know, they've entered a space with their students where there's something happening that's different than just transmission. It's when they've moved into that where it's like, okay, we're exchanging ideas and going back and forth because we're learning together. And I think that's the other thing, you know, great teachers create those learning opportunities, right? You're, you know,
teachers become more valuable than ever, you know, because it's about the passion for learning. Because when we were all growing up, there was this belief that a finite set of information, if provided correctly, and we were willing to learn it, would create a scenario we could be successful for the bulk of our lives, right? That's no longer the case. This stuff is changing 10x scenarios, right? Over and over again. So we really have to teach kids how to learn and relearn skill sets. You know, in you know, another important thing that we've worked with our partners at UW Stout and Western Technical College, Chippewa Valley Technical College, to build a degree program in automation leadership. It's competency-based. Mm. It doesn't necessarily matter where you get the competencies. They could come from work. They could come from high school. They could come from technical school, and they can come from the university. You meet the competencies, you get the credits. Now we're starting to empower people to want to learn and work and add value to society all at the same time.
Okay, you better keep this secret, because somebody out there is going to be like, make them stop, because all of a sudden every public school is going to want to do that. And
well, I hope like, so.
Yeah, right. Man, I've got so many more ideas and things to go, and our time always goes way too quickly when we're with you. Just, you know, put even a teaser out here, Jacob. I wonder what a Mike Bigley and Liftoffs, maybe with a couple of the Alpha people, show together to be talking about, you know, what's happening between. I think that could be a really great show where a lot of people could do a lot of learning, Jacob.
Yeah, it'll be the biggest event since Mike Tyson and Jake Paul went at each other with their different teaching methods. So I can't wait for that. That'll be great.
You know what? Yeah. In fact, you know, instead of everybody being excited about Bad Bunny at the Super Bowl, man, we can, you know, Alpha School and Liftoffs together on Busted Pencils. Your true halftime Super Bowl opportunity. So much going on there. Mike, definitely, though, to put it out there, the number one thing I keep seeing is that, yeah, and Jacob asked a great question, you know, kindergartners, how do we know when things are going to be so different? And that reality is probably more stark than ever, that the number one thing I'm getting and seeing, and I think this really was always good advice, but the best preparation for the future is learning how to learn.
Yes. It's essential. It is the new essential skill. In we can't wait for someone to teach us. Think of the economics. 27 relearns now is the latest statistic, whether that's valid or not, but even if it's half that, complete relearns. If you spent 2 to 4 years in school as an adult, every time you had to relearn something, you're 80 years old and you haven't worked yet. You know what I mean? I think we have to understand those things, but that passion for learning is something we need to spend our time and energy on. So, you know, and I think there's a lot of conversation right now that centers around educating only chunks of our kids. And that is disastrous for our country. And I will say that till the day I am no longer here. It is disastrous for our country if we don't educate every child to their maximum capacity. That's the bottom line. And if we fail, then we have no one to blame but ourselves.
Well, man, I'm going to go with that. Mike Bigley, Liftoffs, thank you for Busting Pencils with us again, Mike.
Oh, I really appreciate it. I appreciate the opportunity. It's fun to talk to you guys.
Ah, we love it. And now it's time for your moment of zen. The history of any country, presented as the history of a family, conceals fierce conflicts of interest, sometimes exploding, most often repressed between conquerors and the conquered, masters and slaves, capitalists and workers, dominators and dominated in race and sex. Thanks for listening to Busted Pencils. Friday, yes, Producer's Choice. Saturday, one full hour of Busted Pencils across all those civic media stations. And yeah, don't you forget, though, too, come back again that Monday for Homeroom. But, you know, here's the best thing. Check us out. Go to BustedPencils.com. Go to Apple Podcasts, go to Spotify, all those things. Let us know what you think about the show, what you'd like to hear more of, what you'd like to hear less of, and all those things. But you know the number one thing? Keep busting pencils.